on to the next installment of the BYOB podcast, sponsored by The Legal Connection and produced by Legal Typist. Thanks for listening. My name is Andrea Canavina, and along with being the producer and moderator of today's event, I am also the CEO of Legal Typist Incorporated, a legal transcription and secretarial outsourcing service based out of beautiful Long Island, New York. As a legal virtual assistant, I help law firm managers and lawyers understand their options when upgrading business processes to digital, and how best to take advantage of delegation and strategic outsourcing in order to get more done with less. Less time, less resources, and most importantly, less stress. If you're on Twitter, please follow me. I'm at Legal Typist. Let's take a quick moment to thank our sponsor, The Legal Connection, where legal technology and people connect. The Legal Connection community site continues to grow and continues to add great content, including webinars and podcasts such as this one. In today's class, Louisiana attorney David Oguin shares with us his thoughts on achieving balance in a law practice, and he provides listeners with some great tools and tactics to getting and keeping balance. Thank you, David, for taking the time.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you about this today, and appreciate, you know, just the conversations that we've had in general about it. In terms of balance, I mean, I look at, and we've discussed, you know, a few things that have worked for me, and I mean, these are tools that I've developed from a number of different sources. None of them are can I claim originality for. The first thing that I look at, and when I'm looking in terms of balance, you told me the topic as far as how do I gain insight and perspective. So balance is really, essentially, it is based upon your perspective. The way that I can start that, and one thing that's helpful for me, is to take an examination of, like, where I'm at. And there are two things that sort of work with that. One, just naturally, because we're here at the end of June, middle of the year, it works for a mid-year review. The mid-year review, whether or not, I think it's always a good idea to write out your annual goals. And the way that I do it is I break out seven different categories and write what is my goal in that particular area or arena of my life. June makes a great opportunity to kind of review those and see where am I at. But even if you didn't write out your goals, it's a good opportunity to pause and say, how's the year going? Let me look at my financials. Let me look at the way that I feel. I mean, something that's very, you know, just completely subjective. How am I feeling? How do I feel like work is going? How do I feel like the other aspects of my life are going? Whether it's family, social, health, whatever those factors are. And I think those factors are different for everybody. But whatever those factors are, it's a good opportunity, even without, you know, written annual goals, to take a time out and say, okay, well, look, if the year ended and all we did was double where we are right now, would that be a good year or a bad year?
That's a good way to look at it, nice and quick.
Well, and that's kind of the way that I think about it, in terms of it's a good way to gain perspective on balance. If we doubled right now, is this a good year?
Right.
And, you know, oftentimes for me, it's not. I realize I've got some deficits. I want to be present more with mm-hmm. my family. I want to be present more in this way. I need more sleep, whatever it is. But you'll only make the changes that are necessary to get you that once you recognize, hey, this is not where I want to be at. And it's too easy to sort of just keep floating through unhappy, but because you never are forced to confront it, no changes are made. So that sort of mid-year review is one thing that I think is helpful. Breaking it down even further from that, one of the things that I try to do is I try to do a weekly review. So on Friday, I try to just, you know, one of the things that I keep in my coat pocket of my suit is a little notebook. And so I make notes from different conversations I had or ideas that I come up with. So Friday afternoons are important for me because I pull out my notebook. I look at everything that I wrote down. Hey, I need to send a card to this person. Well, let me research this topic. Let me do that. I look around my office. Where are my loose papers? I've got several hiding spots for them. I pull them all out. Is this something to be filed? Is this something that needs to stay on my desk? You know, what is it? But it is in that processing stage, both of my handwritten notes, but also the papers, that allows me to sort of clear out. But it forces me to also kind of stay focused and stay present on things that I thought were important at the time.
And to review where you're at the end of the week and move things forward.
Absolutely. Because, right. I mean, part of it is looking at your week forward, looking at what's coming up on my calendar, what's coming up on my to-do list. And
it keeps your office nice and neat. There's nothing wrong with that.
I am a little bit OCD in that respect, yes. It keeps the office nice and neat. So, you know, that's one thing that I think that's very helpful in terms of just getting that perspective on balance is the mid-year review. The other thing that I think is helpful, and again, it can be at any time of the year, but it's what I think is commonly known as a life wheel. Mm-hmm. Different, you know, your spokes will be different based upon the individual.
Different spokes for different folks.
That's exactly right. You can maybe copyright that.
You heard it here first, folks.
And we can make, you know, a copy of that available with materials, but essentially it's a circle with different spokes out, and the spokes represent the key areas of your life, and you and can personally evaluate where am I at. And, you know, so those may be you know, your personal roles. For me, husband, father, friend. They'll include other things in terms of you know, sort of where you are personally and maybe your spiritual sense, your mental challenge and learning. I mean, are you reading? I mean, are you doing things? Again, it all really does go back to what do you value. So that's why the spokes will change for different people. I mean, some people say, well, I don't ever care to read. You know, that's not a spoke. It's a spoke that I have in my wheel, but it's not necessarily a spoke that someone else needs to have.
Right.
But
well, balance
finances,
is all about finding balance. You know, it's balance. Everybody's going to be different. It's about finding
absolutely
your own balance. Right.
Absolutely. And, I mean, there's no right or wrong, and no one can say, hey, you've got balance, you don't, because it really is. I mean, the people that are closest to you can give you some insight and some perspective, but you're the one that's sort of walking the balance beam,
right.
Pun intended. You know, I mean, I include finances, health and fitness, community engagement. One that I have a tough time with, but that I feel like is important, it's the reason I keep it on my list, is fun.
Sometimes you do have to remind yourself that you have to have some fun, that we're all, you know, we only get one go-round here.
I have to remind myself, because otherwise I'll see it as essentially an endless series of tasks, okay? Got my tasks at work, got my tasks at home, check, check, check. And so when someone suggested to me that I should include fun on my life wheel, I'm like, I'm okay. I mean, I enjoy life. I'm like, well, why don't you put fun on there? I mean, when was the last time you really had fun?
When's the last time you focused on having fun?
Right. Well, last weekend, I went to Cherokee, North Carolina.
Uh-oh.
I trout fished in the mountain streams for 4 days with my brother and a dear friend. We swung off of rope swings and we floated down the river. And it was fun. And
okay.
So...
cool.
Now my life wheel is a little bit more balanced, but in the day to day, fun is a spoke that's just not on my radar. But the
it's the bigger picture. It's always, you know, it's always
right.
Got to be out there in the bigger picture. We're looking at these in larger views and smaller views, and however you're looking at this topic, you know, the perspective is going to change.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not, you're not doing a life wheel just upon, like, how was yesterday? Because yesterday may be really skewed. But it's helpful for me when I look at it and I look at those spokes and I say, okay, you know, spiritual, personal, finances, business, you know, fun, health and fitness, community engagement, husband, father, and you sort of plot, but and you can do 1 to 5, you can do 1 to 10, but you plot a course and say, that's where I'm at. Mm-hmm. Well, what you'll find and what I found is that my wheel is not evenly distributed. And we all know that, you know, on our automobiles, we've got to bring our vehicles in and get them rotated and balanced. And one of the things that they do, I mean, those little metal weights that we see on the attached inconspicuously on the outside of our rims is to balance our wheel. It's the same thing in our lives, is that if you're at a 10 or a 5 on a 5-point scale with business, but you're at a 0 in terms of your personal roles, you can run pretty hard for a little bit of time, but it's not sustainable.
Right.
And so that is, for me, the benefit of it was it identified the areas that were not sustainable. That, you know, running at that speed,
it was unbalanced, and it was going to create, it was only, yeah, we all know what it's like to have an unbalanced tire. Oof.
Right. Yeah, I mean, your steering wheel starts shaking and everything else. But until you know that, you don't know to make any adjustments.
Right.
You just keep going. And we don't get, at least I don't, in my immediate day-to-day life, I don't see the shaking in the steering wheel. It's very easy for me to get down the road and have no concept. But by having these check-ins, whether it's at the end of the week, which I try to do regularly, I also try to do an end of a quarter, but it's those pieces of feedback that allow me to know, hey, I need to make an adjustment here. I haven't hit a brick wall yet, but it's coming if I continue without any adjustment. Another idea would be, and I frankly have not been brave enough to do it myself, but somebody may be, ask your significant other if they were to do your life wheel. You know what?
Oh, I don't think I would ask Mr. LT that.
Well, I like to say I haven't either. But if you're stuck, you don't see a way out, and you don't know exactly what's wrong, if you identify what the spokes are, and that's the key to the life wheel, is what are your spokes? You can fill them out, but then if you ask somebody that you really care about, say, what do you think, where do you think my health is on a 1 to 5 or 1 to 10 scale in these areas? It's not that you adopt what they say, but the feedback they give you will be priceless.
It will. It would be very interesting, I would imagine. Maybe I'll revise
my
response.
That being said, I've never done that because, well, just never done that.
Well, you know, my whole thing is, you know, ultimately would that be something that would cause us to butt heads? Because he's a Leo and I'm an Aries, and when we butt heads, it's not pretty. So I'm thinking, maybe not.
Well, and I agree with you. And so it's really, it's more from a data standpoint. And
right.
So,
could I do the data collection without the emotion? I don't know if I would be a
well, but enough. I want to throw it out, but I also want to throw it out with the caveat of, hey, I never did this. So I don't want people to think, oh, well, you know, David
said
it. It is
true, though, to think about
it,
maybe not in terms of your significant other, but if you're doing, instead of just a life wheel, but say you did a life of your business wheel, and just limited it to the efficiency or effectiveness of your office and threw it out to your staff where they thought time might be better spent or focus or whatever. It might, you know, we might be able to refine it a little to take it somewhere out of the personal and maybe not covering today's whole topic, but it might be a way to balance your business. So just a thought.
Absolutely.
On that.
Well, and so those are sort of the first two tools that I use to kind of, if you're familiar with orienteering, just to kind of gain your bearings. Mm-hmm. You know, where am I? And, you know, get a gauge on the current balance. Then it moves more into in balance, out of balance, what do I do tomorrow type of thing, and how do I handle this moving forward. And so that's where, you know, I've broken down a few things that I found that have really helped me, because this has all been a learning experience for me. This is not something that they teach in you know, college or law school or
anywhere,
even on the job training. I mean, it's not there. I mean, I didn't, in my experience, and from the people that I've talked to, you've learned these things or you find these things only because you seek them out. It's not because they've taught it to you in the classroom or your boss has said, hey, I really am heavily invested in making sure that you're balanced.
Right.
Because they don't pay the price. So when I look at, like, how do you implement it, you know, one of the first things that I found was, you know, rewinding a number of years. If you were to look at my schedule, it would be crazy. You know, phone calls, meetings, appointments, you know, engagements, just any number of different things spread between the hours of 7:30 in the morning and 8 o'clock at night. And
right.
At one point,
like most business people.
Right.
People in business, I should say.
But it didn't work for me because, well, it worked from the standpoint of I could get through each day. And it, in that respect, it worked. But when I thought about what am I trying to accomplish, because what frustrated me, and I think what frustrates a lot of people, is thinking that all you're doing every day is simply treading water. I didn't take on water today.
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel that way at the end of the day. Well, I didn't drown, you know, so it was a good day.
But, and I felt that way, and I still feel that way at the end of a number of different days, but after a while, just taking satisfaction in the fact that I didn't drown was disappointing, because I also feel like I didn't make any ground. I didn't make any headway. I didn't get anything done. And someone else put it better, and it was simply that you were allowing other people to set your agenda.
Right.
And it was very much true for me. Other people were setting my agenda. They were setting my priorities. I would step and fetch as necessary, and I lived to fight another day. But what was frustrating or unsatisfying at the end of those days was the fact that all I had done was meet somebody else's agenda, and yet I still didn't have anything that I was really proud of. I didn't have a product or work product or something that I felt like, hey, I'm doing good here. Yeah, I held them off, but they could attack again tomorrow.
Right.
And so that's sort of where I got into thinking about, like, how does my body work? How does my system work? And what I found for me is that in the morning, that is when I'm most creative. It's when I'm most productive.
Right.
It is my precious time. And so the last thing I want to be doing is wasting that time doing something that doesn't help that. And so that could be sitting in a 2-hour meeting or being engaged in a conference call.
Oh.
Because it's when I could be doing what I'm being paid to do.
Right.
As opposed to just sort of holding them off for one more day. So the tool, I guess, is sort of blocking time. And what I've done, because once I figured that out for me, was I blocked the mornings off. Until 1:30 in the afternoon, I want no phone calls. I want no appointments. I want to be purely focused on reading, drafting, doing something, anything that helps move that ball down the court. Now,
and you mean by no calls, no like planned calls to get back to people, not like people are still calling your office and you're speaking to them, of course. Unless
right.
I would imagine
right.
you're blocked off drafting and there's an actual no interruption time. But I just the way you said no calls, it made it sound like until 1:30 every day you never are on the phone. And I know that's not you.
Right. No. I mean, I take some, but I really have to balance it because,
right.
you know, when I left a firm and I started my own, I mean, maybe I had 5 calls a day and every one of them was priceless. And so, of course, I took them all and was very thankful for it. I'm still very thankful for it, but now I'm mindful of schedule management. And
right.
so in that term, it is, I'm going to call you in 2 hours. But there was a TED Talk, and I'm trying to remember who it was from. I should have Googled it before we got on the call. But there was a TED Talk by a guy, and he basically talked about Jason Fried. Okay.
Oh, 37 Signals.
So there's a TED Talk by Jason Fried about why work doesn't happen at work. And one of the things that he talked about, based upon his experience and the surveys and the research that he had done, is that when people talked about getting work done, they talked about being at a coffee shop, talked about being any place except for their office. And the reason was because of interruptions. And he didn't get all the way in depth in it. But basically, it goes through, like, what does an interruption cost you? And I've seen other studies that have said a single interruption costs you 15 minutes on the back end.
Yeah,
so no
anywhere from 15 to 20 minutes is what I've read it takes you to get back into exactly the same mind frame and thought process where you had been prior to the interruption.
Exactly. So if you're working on a brief or you're working on something, you know, substantive that requires your mental engagement, you get a phone call, you get a staff member that comes in, you get anybody that comes in, any of those things, you can process it, you can deal with it. But then when you decide to sort of get back to whatever you were originally set out for, it's going to take you 15 or 20 minutes to get back to where you were, which is why in sort of blocking out that time until 1:30, I do take some calls. I don't take every call.
Of course not. No, and I didn't mean to suggest that you did. It just some people talk about this whole,
out,
you know, don't look at email until 1:30 in the afternoon, and just because of the way that you mentioned it for every day. I think it would
right.
be very difficult for our listeners and attorneys to come at this and say, well, I'm not even going to be on the phone. I'm blocking out until 1:30 every day to be on the phone. It's not realistic for them. And it's not really what you
right.
do, I don't think. So that's why I want to
clarify. No, you're absolutely right. And so it's not that I block out and I avoid every call until 1:30.
No, but you only
but
want the emergency ones that you need to be interrupted for versus every call.
Right.
Right.
And it's the same thing with email. So I try to, and this is more aspirational, I try to not check email until about 2 hours in. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because I know the way I work. When I wake up and I flip on my computer and I check my email, my immediate reaction is to read every single email, respond to the ones that are critical, and every client is critical. And all of a sudden, and then that leads to phone calls, and it leads to everything else, or review this document. All of a sudden, my whole day has been, my agenda has been substituted with somebody else's. And that's where sort of the comment that somebody had made of, you know, email is somebody else's to-do list for you.
I do believe that was Ernie the attorney, and he and I were discussing DAFT and the and how to handle email and everything else like that. So for anybody who's listening, when I put this out on the web, I'll put a link to that conversation with Ernie as well.
Well, and DAFT is perfect for that because, you know, I mean, you have a couple of different things that come into play. For me, it was very difficult for me to not respond. I mean, we have alerts, or I do. I have alerts on my phone, on my iPad, on my computer. It's this little ding, hey, you've got a new email. And it's been interesting to me. One of the authors and bloggers and speakers that I follow is Gary Vaynerchuk. And he's got a lot of really, really good stuff out there. And one of the comments that he's made is how much email has sort of become the bane of our existence. And where at the outset, it was exciting to get an email. I mean,
We
even had a movie about it. You've got mail.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's like, okay, I got 100 emails today in my inbox that are unread. I don't want to read those. You know, last week, it's the very first Charlie Chaplin movie that I ever watched. But the reason I watched it, because I was trying to get perspective on what a blogger had mentioned, and he made the comment of, in this Charlie Chaplin movie, Modern Times, the gears of the machinery would be replaced by email. And so I was like, okay. I mean, I got the comment, but I wanted to kind of get the context, so I went and I watched the movie, and I actually laughed. It was pretty good. So I don't know that I'm going to be watching a bunch more, but it was good. I mean, email really has become the bane of our existence.
Oh, yeah. Right. This is nobody's really taught about how to be in business or conduct business or run a business, or everybody's different. Nobody's taught how to use email. And all of those people that have been in business, that had processes and everything else in place that were working perfectly fine before email, now are completely because now, again, everybody is so bogged down in email processing, reading, reviewing, deleting. It's just
I met with a client yesterday who's an accountant, and so he has professional practice, he has a bunch of clients, and he was talking about, unrelated to this from his standpoint, I mean, it wasn't the context in which he brought it up, he was talking about the email generation and how people expect instantaneous response.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminded me, regardless of the profession and the role, we train our clients as to our expectations. And so if we respond immediately, we should not be shocked when they respond right back with another question.
Right. And then you're going back and forth on 6 interruptions that you didn't realize you were going to even have one. And
absolutely,
you've trained your client that whenever they send you a question and a follow-up question and another one after that, you're going to get right back to them.
Right.
Well, which is all well and good until the one time that you can't get back to them right away, and now all of a sudden you got a really nice negative against you, all because you taught them to expect something unrealistic from you.
And that was challenging for me to learn, because it was a challenging, I guess, transition, because when I started, I had nothing else to do. I mean, I had 5 clients.
Right. But it's not only that, it's also the excitement. People are excited that they're already, oh, look, I can get email on my person. And I think you and I had been talking earlier about how I've been connected to email since 2002. And
which I am, like, on one hand envious of, just from a respect standpoint, but the other hand I'm like, wow, you've really been tethered for a long time.
Well, it really means that I learned how to turn it off. Otherwise, I would have been burned out I've been doing this for 13 years, and thankfully, and I'll knock on my desk, I haven't experienced burnout. But about, I want to say 2006 or 2007, I was interviewed by Michael Gerber, who wrote the E-Myth.
Okay. Yeah,
E-Myth. Visited. And one of the reasons why he and I kind of hit it off, it was kind of funny, but he was more interested in marketing his new work than he was on anything other and focused on that. Good for him. So it wasn't something that was really released. But my problem was everything that was in his book, I learned the hard way through you know, I was thankful that he was able to put into words a lot of the things that I had to deal with, because I went from a single business owner to somebody who has other people who handle the day-to-day work, but I still have to manage everything. So,
well, in his book, The E-Myth, is very good. He's got another one, The E-Myth Attorney, E-Myth Revisited. But what you're talking about absolutely dovetails exactly with it, because, you know, he sort of describes the roles of being the entrepreneur, the manager, and the technician. Mm-hmm. And if you are stepping and fetching for every email, you're the technician.
Right.
And in his book, sort of the example is the lady that bakes the pies.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't do all of it and yet accomplish your larger goals. And that's sort of where it comes back to balance, is, you know, what are my goals? What am I trying to achieve? If the only thing that I'm trying to achieve is to let clients know I'm thinking about them, responding to an email the moment I receive it is great.
Right. As a process of your business, everything that you do for one client, you have to multiply over the thousands of clients you're going to, hopefully, if everything works the way it's supposed to, have over the course of the life of your business. And I think also what a lot of service professionals don't consider is the fact that it's a full-time job to be the lawyer, and it's a full-time job to run a business. So in essence, if you are a true solo with no support staff, you literally have two full-time jobs in front of you immediately all the time. And for you to set up your clients to think that you have the luxury of being able to respond to them all the time is just a doomed for failure. It's a negative for your clients and a negative for you all the way around.
Absolutely. But even with support staff, it's the same scenario, because the client wants to hear from you, and you feel like, well, they need to hear from me. So, I mean, you can have 10 support staff, but to the extent the client's emailing you and you feel like you're the only one that's in a position to respond to them, or that a response will satisfy, it's the same scenario. For me, that's where I needed some help. And so one of the things that I found helpful was an application called Freedom. I think it's a native Mac app. So if they're Mac users, they can get it natively.
But you're not a native Mac user, are you?
No. I have the iPhone and the iPad, but I have a Windows computer.
Okay.
But I downloaded, there is a Windows version of this application, and basically it says, how much freedom do you want? And it's a good term, because you put in 60 minutes, 120 minutes, whatever. It shuts off your email. It shuts off your internet. And the only way to get out from it is to reboot your computer. So are you really going to reboot just so you can check Facebook and see who checked in where or what they're posting, or to do something else? It really, for me, it was sort of that check and balance again of, this is going to make sure that I don't get any emails. I don't even know that email's sitting there waiting for my response. I don't get the opportunity to evaluate it, because the problem is, for me, if I went to go evaluate every email, I'd put them all on a 5 scale. Oh yeah, that's 5. Oh, I need to get right back to them.
Right.
And so by just taking that off my radar, it allowed me to completely focus on my most valuable skill, which is representing my client, thinking it through, drafting, documenting,
focusing,
developing. Yeah. And so that's one tool that I think is pretty helpful in as a supportive for that sort of that first thing of, in terms of blocking time. I mean, I think it's important to block time. One way to guard that and to kind of provide a check and balance for your own blocking it off is this application. You know, the other thing I've done in terms of Outlook, I've blocked Mondays, Tuesdays, and Fridays is no appointments, because otherwise I'm going to be running and going every day of the week
mm-hmm.
with very little control. And so by sort of blocking it out, and thankfully Outlook made it convenient, I could say Monday, Tuesday, Friday, and make it a reoccurring event. And so it's blocked out, sort of it's shaded in a particular color. And so when a client calls and my secretary or the receptionist talks to them and they look at my calendar, they're like, well, I've got an appointment available on Wednesday or Thursday. I mean, go through any number of hours, but
again, it's a form of time blocking. But it's a different way of illustrating how to put it into practice. You are technically time blocking your appointments and restricting them to 2 days per week instead of stretching them all over, which a lot of people understand. And you know, whether you're solo, true solo, or whether you've got staff, when you're doing meetings with people, you have to prep for those meetings. I don't care how much you like to fly off the seat of your pants and don't feel you have to prep for anything. You are still getting dressed, getting there, getting the materials necessary, and then doing the follow-up afterwards. So you, in terms of just, say, a half-hour meeting, you're now blocking, technically you're utilizing an hour and a half to 3 hours, depending on what you have to do, how far away, and all the other stuff that goes with it. So if you can get all of your, that kind of stuff. Another thing some of my clients like to do is to time block their administrative work. You know, there's a time when your brain is really full and fresh for client work, pleading work, or, you know, court work, or whatever it is, the more substantive legal work there is. But then you still kind of need to be fresh or not fresh. So to me, for you, just from hearing from what you said today, I would suggest that administrative type of work that still falls on your shoulders should be done after your meetings in the afternoon. Give yourself a half hour, 15 minutes, whatever it is you need every day, because you've refreshed yourself from your meeting and your calls. That you're now not 100% and fresh like you are in the morning, but you're fresh enough to be able to do, you know, I hate to say it, and people, it's not rocket science administrative work, but it's exacting. So if you make a mistake,
it is exacting.
It's something that can hurt you. So that's why you should be fresh, but not necessarily as fresh as you would be for your client. So
well, I do that exactly because one of the administrative tasks that I have in my firm is paying the bills.
Right.
And so I have a stack of bills or receipts that need to be entered into QuickBooks, and I just maintain this stack. And then when I get to that point, I enter them in all at one time. What I originally tried to do was enter them as they came in. It worked when I had two bills. As it's grown, I found all of a sudden, man, it is eating up my day. It's consuming it.
Well, I think it falls into interruptions. It takes you so long to open up the program, to get into the mindset, to be able to get into the finance, to go over here, this is where I go. If you're doing five of them at once, you're already in the program and you're just cycling through.
Absolutely.
But if you have to close it through and you have to save it and you're in QuickBooks and it likes you to do that backup every time, and, you know, so...
Now,
it's another form of time blocking is stacking the physical, not just the mental.
Absolutely. And I mean, I'm looking at my bill stack right now as it's on where it is. One of the other things that I've found that's been very helpful, because the way my mind works, because it is very distracted by squirrels, is I keep a legal pad on the side. And so it is when I'm in the middle of researching or writing or coming up with the next, you know, strategy for something, that I'll come up with a, you know, case-winning idea. And I'm like, ooh, I need to chase that. So by having that legal pad, I just write it down. I capture it. David Allen talks a lot about it in his book, Getting Things Done. But it's not limited to, I would say, the Getting Things Done system. Mm-hmm. It is just a good way to... If you block time, in the middle of that block time, you're going to have an idea. You're going to have a thought. Oh, I need to send so-and-so a letter. I need to return this phone call. What about researching this? This may be the answer to that question. If you have a legal pad that's nothing but sort of ideas, you write it down. It allows your mind to forget it, and you can keep doing what you were doing originally. On the other hand, if you chase each one of them, you're no better off than you were before.
Right.
So,
I don't think people chase those ideas so much as they think they're going to remember them later, and they never do. So it's like,
right. Well, and I know, unfortunately, I've learned that I will not remember it. And so,
oh, I keep thinking that I will, but then, no, if I don't write it down, I know I will not. So,
right. Now, I'm very much with you.
But I think, we did email management. I think we talked about blocking time, and then there was we kind of lumped it, I think, into the blocking of the time, but the batching of the tasks.
Right. So that's that's sort of the next thing. And I mean, it does, sort of go in hand with the blocking of time, is that batch tasks, for me, those tasks most frequently are either creative or returning phone calls. And so I'll take all my phone calls and I'll return them once I sort of hit that mid-afternoon slump, but then I'll return them all in a row. But it's just kind of what you were talking about earlier in terms of batching administrative tasks. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. It's like saying, okay, well, here's a stack of bills that I need to get paid or I need to enter into QuickBooks. Let me do all of them at one time.
Right.
It's the same thing in terms of, well, here are the 10 people that have called. We'll start calling them back in successive order.
Right.
But if I entered in each bill as it came in, that would not be efficient. If I returned each call the moment I got that email, it would not be efficient. It would destroy any continuity or sort of uninterrupted block of time. So
right.
One of the things that helps with that block of time is batching tasks and saying, look, I'm going to do all of this at one time. One thing that's helpful for that is what we had just talked about in terms of writing down your notes. You know, when you write down on that side legal pad of, oh, I need to research this, I need to call them, I need to send them a thank you note, whatever it is, when you group those tasks together, once you kind of review that list, you'll find, at least I have, that you'll be much more productive in any one of those areas. And then that sort of brings us to Leviathan, which is, what we were talking about earlier with the Charlie Chaplin movie of email, replacing the gears in modern times. Email will just, we get it on our phone now, we get it on our computer, we get it on our iPad, we get it everywhere. And there's no, you're never, untethered. And so the thing that's important that I found, at least for me, is to find out how to manage that. And,
right.
And in managing that email, it's a combination of a couple of things. One, it's a combination of saying, using the Freedom app to the extent that it's helpful, of just shutting it off.
Right.
The other thing.
Well, I don't
helpful,
know. See, you're an iPad person, so I don't know if you remember BlackBerry.
I do. I mean, I loved BlackBerry. I switched to the iPhone kicking and screaming, but I loved BlackBerry.
Okay, well, see, when I first started way back when, I'm a Palm person. I actually still have Palm devices. Don't laugh. It's a great operating system.
That's impressive.
And I hope Meg over at HP does something, please, at one day with it, because Palm was a touch-sensitive screen device long before iPhones even came out. They were there, but then Crackberries were the second one after the Palm devices got telephones, and they didn't have a touch screen. But the thing that separated them from people who didn't have them was the whole Crackberry thing. It's like it would be it constantly buzzed at you, constantly gave you this buzz, and people got accustomed to having the buzz, and if they didn't have the buzz, they called it the phantom buzz, and all of a sudden people were checking their devices because they hadn't been buzzed recently, and it was just this constant barrage.
I'm very
barrage.
Familiar with it, because the vibration on an iPhone is very different from the BlackBerry. And
oh, okay.
I was used to, I could hear my BlackBerry vibrate when I got an email or a text message,
mm-hmm.
and I would leave it on my desk and I could hear it. When I got the iPhone, when I finally switched, I couldn't hear it. And so it did. It led to me checking the phone repeatedly, thinking, hey, is there something there?
the very same thing happens and transcends devices.
Absolutely. I've had to learn how to manage it.
Right. Well, see, that's the difference. Being a Palm person, I had a Crackberry was known as a push device. There was no way for you to turn off what was coming to it. It was tunneling through no matter what you did. Whereas Palm devices were always ask devices. I always had to ask it to send me the next group of emails off of the server. So So I learned how in the middle of my day to schedule, you know, I wouldn't look at email until I knew I had a block of, you know, back then 20 or 30 emails were coming in when I would ask for it, not the hundreds and, I don't even want to tell you that I have to go through every day. So that's what I'm trying to say. So I think that turning it off and blocking became a natural part of how I worked, you know, because of the fact that I was a Palm device person versus I would always ask for it. And I do tell attorneys, turn them off. You don't need to be notified that there's something there. And I think that's another thing from my secretarial background. It never ends. Like, everyone's like, when does the filing get done? I'm like, every day for the rest of your life. It never ends. And it's just, you know, nobody likes filing. It's a duty. Nobody likes a duty. That's what they used to say. But that's what you get paid for. And filing is a duty, and it's one of those things that has to get done. Email is now a duty. It's something that has to be triaged, and things have to be taken care of, or bad things happen. So in learning to batch them and learning to ask for them and all the way back, it's just a way to keep a sense of things. And attorneys have to figure these things out on their own, but when you're somebody that has to support three attorneys, you get thrown into the mix and you work these things through. So definitely batching works, definitely turning things off, and learning when to be the best time is for you to do those things. And that it's never going away. Don't ever think you're going to get to the bottom of
it's,
email. It's never going away.
and so for me, like, one of the things and one of the reasons that I really took to the DAFT method was I subscribe to different blogs and, you know, emails like Techno Lawyer that will send, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, I've got one right now, Litigation World, taking one for the team plus 60 more must-reads.
Oh, isn't that funny? I was like, oh, only 94 must-reads. I can add that to my schedule. Thanks, Techno Lawyer.
And so it's sitting there in my inbox. And typically, I mean, I'm not going to read all 60, but I'll read 10. As I scroll through the table of contents, I'll find 10 that I say, you know, I want to read that.
Right.
But the problem is, if it's sitting in my email as an unread message, it's adding to it, and it's sort of it's increasing the perceived weight. And
right.
So what I've done with the DAFT method is I put that in defer.
Right.
I have a defer box. And so when I get newsletters or different things like that, it's very easy. I move them to defer. They're no longer sort of on my immediate radar. I don't feel the immediate need to read and respond.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have 50 emails that are unread. I don't have 50 emails that are in my inbox.
Right. Well, that's one of the main tenets of DAFT is, unfortunately, I've amended it through the years, and the fact that Outlook, especially if you're on Office 365, allows your PST file to become unlimited in size. When DAFT was first created, when your PST file got very large, it started breaking. So I've kind of amended it that you don't necessarily need to have delete as much. So I kind of took delete out of it, and I leave stuff in the inbox because you can move it over, and I only move things over to ACK. But defer has become one of the best things ever, because that's where you put those things that you don't want to forget about them. When you put things into file, they're done. They're gone. Unless you need to come back and find it at a future time, they're done. And you don't want to put it into ACT, even though you need to read it, because ACT is really for the stuff that's of the day-to-day, the paid work, the client work, the things that you really need to have that focus time on, where you want to get the things done. So that's why it's just perfect to have the defer. I use the defer when I have downtime, unexpected downtime, outside and away from my desk. That's where I'm like hanging at the bank forever, and I want to flip through and go, oh, what's interesting? Oh, look at that. Oh, look at that. And then if I find something in Techno Lawyer, I throw it into my Evernote.
Well, you know, I do the same thing, because before, you know, I mean, this is dating me a little bit, but before I came across DAFT, I used to carry my briefcase with me with a stack of articles that I'd printed out that I thought would be interesting that I didn't have time to read at the moment, but I thought I'd read at some point.
Right.
And so I didn't want to go to the bank. I didn't want to go to the doctor. I didn't want to go anywhere, because I never knew when I would be sitting on hold, and it would be a good opportunity to read it. But it got pretty cumbersome to carry around a briefcase with 60 different articles that I thought, oh, I'm going to read this at some point.
Right.
Now, with DAFT, I just put them in there. I can pull it up on my iPad, my iPhone, my computer, wherever. But when I find myself waiting, either at a doctor's office or at the grocery store, hopefully not in traffic sometimes, but just different places, boom, I've got an instant reading list, but it's not include the weight of a briefcase and 60 articles. It's just there.
Right, and it's not the content that's weighty either. It's the,
right.
Oh, look, I got me some free time. Oh, wonder what's going on over at Attorney at Work. What's the curmudgeons up to lately? Let me go look, you know?
You know, you're exactly right there. And that's, you know, but that's sort of my process both for gaining the necessary perspective as to where I'm at on on the tightrope, and also what to do about it. So in trying to get the perspective, looking at, you know, given the fact that we're in June, where am I halfway? Would I be happy with everything if I just doubled it and ended the year? And the answer is no. Look at my life wheel. Okay, well, how am I on 1 to 10 or 1 to 5? How am I filling out these different roles or these different spokes? And if my tire's really lopsided, yeah, I can go for a little bit more. But long-term, it's simply not sustainable. And that's where it brings me back to, okay, well, then what am I willing to do about it, or what tools can I use to make some adjustments? And that's where I've found, you know, purely kind of through trial and error, and this is what's worked for me, is, you know, blocking that time and, you know, creating and carving out and guarding those morning times. You know, balance is for you, for I think anybody, and certainly for me, for somebody to maintain balance, it's imperative that they maintain boundaries. And those boundaries for me entailed blocking out time and saying, this is my creative time, and I need to guard that, and communicating that to those that were close to me, saying this is very valuable. It's really important that we're not putting people off. We're guarding this, and so, you know, whether it's using, you know, Freedom App and then capturing my ideas and my thoughts and just random you know, things that would pop into my mind on a legal pad, but still saving that time from guarding it against other interruptions. That was helpful. You know, batching my tasks together, I found, helped me be way more productive instead of trying to, you know, have this unusual gap or, hey, let me be really creative for 20 minutes before my next meeting starts. That just didn't work for me. So, you know, working to batch tasks together, whether it's phone calls, email returns, meetings, creative work, that was important. And at the sort of crux of it all, given the nature of our society and instant communication, was figuring out how can I manage my email? Because as you mentioned earlier, I mean, you can wake up and you've got 100 emails. If you're lucky, if you've got 100, you may have 200. I no longer is it a badge of honor how many email we receive. It's sort of a begrudging fact that we acknowledge, I got 300 email, you know, whatever it is. I don't have that many right now, but it is a drain, and it will overtake everything else. And that's where the boundaries come in. It'll overtake your blocking time and batching tasks if you're stepping and fetching for every email.
Ooh, it'll overtake your family time. It'll overtake your life.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's really weird, because I think just quickly people get connected. They think it's really cool. Then they get over-connected. Then they over-promise. They've already set up these boundaries. And then they have to take a step back. I've heard so far as all the way going, I think they call it email bankruptcy, where they just delete everything and try to start fresh.
But the way you just described that, you're right. It's there is the initial excitement of being connected, and then it is the weight of being overconnected. And I know that from my experience of just sort of starting my own business, you know, leaving a firm and starting my own. Initially, there was a tremendous amount of excitement and satisfaction and reward associated with, I got an email, I got a client, I've got, you know, these communications. And really quickly, it grew to be, I'm overconnected. Now, when I'm in the middle of dinner, phone goes off, you know, phantom vibration or not, I'm checking it. And so, well, you know, and that has a lot of ripple repercussions of, you know, everybody feels like we're second to that phone, we're second to the device.
And some people I've heard, and
it's been, you know, helpful when they go out to dinner or they're meeting with friends, everybody puts their phone out in front of them or they stack them up.
Yep.
In the first
I had tweeted about that. It was kind of funny.
buys the dinner. Right. And all of a sudden, none of those text messages or emails or whatever is quite so important that you want to buy dinner. So everyone just kind of sits there.
So I'm so opposite of everybody else because I used to go to conferences and I'd be tweeting like a crazy person because I'd be the only person tweeting. So I figured all this great information is getting lost. Let me chronicle it. And now there's so many other people. But my first tech show, I was connected, and I was connected to the people, but I wasn't as connected to the place. And then by the third time that I had gone to a live event like that, I don't take out my devices. And when I'm live with clients, my devices are turned off. When I'm live at any of the monthly lunches that I host, everybody else is checking their emails and doing their stuff, but they'll never see. My phone is actually generally, sometimes I'll put it in front of me just to make sure, you know, I am a mom. So I have to kind of worry about that. But if it goes off and it's not something of an emergency nature of a family, then even if it's business, I'm live. No, I'm busy. I have people and eyeballs looking at me.
That is priceless both to our clients and to our loved ones.
I tweeted once from a conference that you never know when you're too busy trying to take notes and you're too busy trying to tweet and you're too busy trying to – you're not looking around you, and I can't even tell you how many people's eyes I've met that are the only people in the room that aren't connected. And some of those relationships last to this day because we recognize the most important thing in the room was what the speaker was saying and the other people that were there, and not making sure we could get it down to 140 characters and be the first one to get it out.
Right.
I think you and I might have to do a follow-up call because I don't think that we have explored the writing it down thing as much as I think it would be helpful.
Sure, and I'd be happy to. In that writing it down, I mean, one of the things that we can talk about is sort of the something that we've talked about before is sort of the creative versus the editor mode.
Mm-hmm. We didn't cover a brain dump either. My favorite when you first realize that pen and paper are a good thing.
Right, but those are things that I think are critical steps in the achieving balance, because the only way, from my perspective and my experience, the only way that I'm going to find balance and get some measure of control is going to be to be able to turn all that other stuff off and to be able to really focus and be present and mindful of what I'm trying to do at the moment. The only way I can do that is if I have a means of capturing all the other stuff.
Right.
You know, and so that's where the brain dump comes in and is critical, is, you know, the writing it down. If I am a proponent of, you know, stick with the task that you set out with but write down the other, then writing down the others equally is important, and writing it down with enough information so that you can follow up with it but yet not get distracted with it at the moment. I'd be happy to do another call.
Another class, we will call that, because at this point we are actually pretty much out of time because I want to get you in and say thank you. Thank you so very much for joining us. Thank you for sharing with everybody the ideas and your journey, because your journey, while it's unique to you, you've gone from, you know, being on your own, being part of a firm, and being somebody that's got to, you know, get their practice up and running and organized and from the start. So your perspective is very helpful to the people that will be listening to this, given the people who are from the Legal Connection and the type of people who listen to the things that I have to say. So
I want to thank you so much
for sharing your thoughts and your experiences with us.
Well, thank you very much for the invitation, and I really appreciate all the work and the support that you've provided over the years.
Oh, thank you, David. All right, so with that, I want to thank everyone for joining us today. And if you have any questions, this is David Ogwin. He's from Louisiana. He's a business attorney. He's D.H. Ogwin on Twitter. And the new website, oh, forgive me, David, I don't have it in front of me, what your website address is?
OgwinLaw.com. OGWYNLAW.com.
Awesome. So if anybody wants to get in touch with David directly and ask him any questions, he's a very helpful person, and I'm sure he'd be more than open to anyone from the Legal Connection community or listening to this podcast who would like to talk.
Absolutely.
Great.
I'd like to thank David for taking time out of his busy schedule to share with us his ideas and thoughts with regard to balance and achieving it in a law practice. For more helpful information such as this, head on over to the community site, www.thelegalconnection.com, where legal, technology, and people connect. Thanks, and have a great day.